exercise.
It's time for the OTH Daily Podcast.
7654321.
You'll never have the sacred stone.
Oh, this you crazy mother.
Good morning, and welcome to the OTH Daily Podcast. I'm your host, the man behind the mic, Christian S. Rao, and we have a great episode for you today, January 2nd, 2020. We have a lot to talk about, so let's get started. Zader is the director of Overtime Heroics Hockey Department. You can find him on Twitter at Matthew Zader, SC.
Hi, Matt. How you doing? And Happy New Year to you.
Yeah, Happy New Year.
Matt, what a great way to bring in the new year, like some outdoor hockey. And for arguably, you know, hockey's biggest game other than the Stanley Cup. So I'm glad to have you on board as we discuss, you know, Matthew Zader here, the hockey director for OTH. And let's just get right into it. The home team, Dallas Stars, rallied late to defeat the Nashville Predators by a score of 4-2. It was a fantastic game. It was really fun to watch. I was surprised how many Nashville Predators fans were there. And there was a pretty cool walk of shame. I'll let you get into it. But what a fantastic game. What were your thoughts as we watched this really fun Winter Classic here on New Year's Day?
Well, I mean, the first thing I noticed was that it seemed more like a playoff game right from the first period. It a lot of physical play. Austin Watson was probably front and center in that. Dallas goes 5-on-3, goes down 5-on-3 really early as well. And as you were saying with the walk of shame, I want to get into that right away. Is Corey Perry with the? I mean, if you watch the replay, it didn't look like he was, you know, doing it on purpose, kind of, you know, with his elbow out there. But I mean, it's still a headshot, and he definitely warranted getting kicked out.
Right, absolutely. And Perry did say after the game, he did say, quote, that it was an awkward play and it was very unintentional. So I mean, at least there's that behind it. It wasn't an unfortunate play, but you know, it wasn't on purpose. So that's good. Yeah. Not surprising at the least for me here, but Dallas did break a Winter Classic record, and that was by being the warmest one on record, 54.9 degrees. And I think we expected this to happen, but it was a very good game. And I know I want to talk more about the game and let you dig into it as well. But I want to say there was a lot of Nashville Predators fans. They traveled well, and it was very fun to watch. What was your thoughts on that? And what did you really like about the game, especially that rally towards the end for the Stars?
Well, yeah, I was really surprised with the amount of Nashville fans. You saw a lot of yellow in the crowd. I mean, predominantly green. But, I mean, for the amount of people that were there, I mean, it looked like there were quite a few Nashville fans there for sure, which is nice to see since it's not normally a thing that happens with American-based teams where they travel with the team well like the Canadian team. So it's great to see that.
So the Predators will head to L.A., to face the Kings on Friday night, and the Stars will also play Friday against Detroit, but this time they'll actually play in their own stadium. They'll stay in Dallas, but they'll head over to the Stars arena. And these two teams, they're both, you know, the Stars helped themselves out with this win here. They're holding on to that third place in the Central Division, and the Predators are in sixth, but they're only a few points out of the wild card. Still a lot of hockey to play. What's your thoughts about the Predators being able to squeak into that playoff spot, and then your thoughts about the Stars holding on to one of those spots in the Central?
I mean, the one thing I've noticed with Nashville this year is they're not getting a lot of scoring from their forwards. I mean, two defensemen kind of lead their team in scoring, which I mean usually doesn't happen for a playoff team. Philip Forsberg to get going, Matt Duchene, Ryan Johansson. I mean, there's some pretty big players there that are not, you know, performing that well this year. So, I mean, you know, Roman Josi with his 15 goals, he's the leading scorer. So, I mean, you need the forwards to kind of get to that mark a little more for them to make the playoffs. Dallas has been, you know, surprising to me, especially with the whole thing with Jim Montgomery getting dismissed there and Rick Bowness taking over, they're still a very good team. And Ben Bishop was phenomenal in this game with goaltending. So if he's good, he's definitely going to be carrying them far.
I think there's a strong possibility we see both these guys once the postseason begins. Obviously, Dallas has more of the opportunity mm-hmm. there. But I think the Predators do have that opportunity to definitely step up and squeak into a possible wild card spot. Mm-hmm. Matt, as we head into the weekend here in a few days, what are some of the top stories to pay attention to in the world of hockey as we continue through and start paying attention more to this sport?
Mm-hmm. Well, the one thing about that kind of happens after Christmas, there's that lull with games. It gets right back at it tomorrow with 12 games on the slate. So lots of hockey to be played on a Thursday, which is not usually a huge hockey day, but lots of stuff to watch tomorrow. Lots of playoff battles already starting as we get tomorrow's kind of hits the midseason. So you're going to start seeing kind of teams, you know, figure out who they are. You know, gets to midseason, you know what the contenders are and what the pretenders are. So there's a lot of stuff to kind of figure out as it starts going here.
Any player or any team that you want to give a maybe a big watch for the next couple of weeks to really pay attention to as they maybe push themselves in the playoffs or just hold on to a spot, or maybe just someone that maybe a dark horse that you maybe not a lot of people are paying attention to?
Well, I want to say, you know, it may sound like a homer type thing, but I'm going to say the Canucks. Just the fact that they're kind of hitting their stride on a 5-game winning streak to go, you know, going into the Christmas break. And then this month, there are no back-to-backs. They're kind of and hitting teams that aren't in the playoff race right now. So I would look for them to kind of make some noise, especially if they can, you know, continue their run they are on right now. Another one to watch is the Edmonton Oilers, which they've kind of fallen off the Pacific Division battle right now too, everyone watches Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl quite a bit, especially in their 1-2 in scoring. I believe they're still 1-2 in scoring as well. So yeah, Edmonton Oilers, definitely another team to watch.
Fantastic. Hey, I'm looking forward to it. Matt, thanks for joining me today on the OTH Daily, and I hope to have you on again soon.
Oh, for sure. Definitely up for another spot.
Awesome. Thanks, man.
Good morning, everybody. This is Cody Hodek with your Overtime Heroics NBA updates. Now, today, in honor of the new year, I wanted to do a resolution special. So what I did is I came up with a list of 5 resolutions that are NBA-related that I wanted to share with all of you. So I'm going to be talking about a few players, I'm going to be talking about the fans, and just some things that we all can do a little bit better in this new decade. My first resolution is aimed at 3 specific players: Devin Booker, Trae Young, and Bradley Beal. Now, all 3 of these players carry a huge offensive load. They do a lot for their team. They score, they distribute, they pretty much do everything that they can. However, on defense, they all struggle pretty significantly. Jacob Goldstein has a statistic called defensive PIPM, and in that database for this year, he has 474 NBA players. Here's how those 3 players rank. Devin Booker is 470th out of 474. Trae Young is 473rd, so literally the second to worst. And Bradley Beal, 474th. Bradley Beal is literally the bottom of the list on Jacob Goldstein's DPIPM. Not only that, but the Wizards this year have a defense that is 7.8 points per 100 possessions worse than league average, which, out of 846 teams since 1990, is 844th. This isn't all Bradley Beal's fault. Especially as a shooting guard, you're not going to impact the game on defense that much. But when you rank that low on this statistic, there's something pretty sketchy going on. And these 3 guys definitely need to do a better job of buying in and doing what they can on defense. Resolution number 2 is for Ben Simmons and Giannis. And what I want them to do, no, it is not 3-pointers I'm focusing on. Today, I'm focusing on their free throws. Right now, Giannis is shooting a career low 60.8% from the free throw line. Now, that's not the absolute lowest free throw percentage you've heard of. Obviously, Ben Wallace and Shaq and throughout history have had worse free throw percentages. But this is after 5 straight seasons of 72%. he dips down to 60.8%. He's shooting 10 free throws a game. He's literally leaving 4 points a game just out there that he could be getting. So if he corrected that, he'd be one of the best offensive players. I mean, he already is one of the best offensive players, but he'd even be that much better. Ben Simmons, he's never been very good at free throws, but he's down to 58.8%. Now, I love that both of these players, well, I guess Giannis, because Ben Simmons really hasn't had the confidence to shoot that three yet, but instead of focusing on that three ball, I wish that they would focus on those free throws more, because especially Giannis, who's going to be driving a ton more and taking a lot of contact, you're going to make teams afraid to follow you. They can't hack you. They can't do anything like that. So that puts them at a really big disadvantage. All right, so number two resolution is Ben Simmons and Giannis, please work on your free throws. My third resolution is aimed at the Utah Jazz's Donovan Mitchell. One thing has really stood out to me this year, and that's when both Mike Conley and Donovan Mitchell are on the court. They seem to rely on a bunch of pull-up mid-range jumpers. And I know a lot of people have this beautiful nostalgia for the mid-range jumper, especially after guys like Michael Jordan and Kobe Bryant. But guys, the analytics points towards layups, free throws, and three-pointers. Listen to this. So if you take Donovan Mitchell's first three seasons and you look at the percentage of his shots that he's shot at the rim and at the three-point line, both of those numbers have been going down progressively each year. His rookie year, Donovan Mitchell took 26% of his shots at the rim. This year, 17.7%. His rookie year, 40% of his shots were three-pointers. This year, 30%. That just means that he's taking all of those shots and putting them in this more inefficient zone. If he could spread that out and attack the rim more, number one, he'd be getting more free throws. Number two, he'd be getting a lot more efficient shots. And if he could just stretch out some of those long mid-rangers to that three-point line, his 25 points a game could jump up even more and help the Utah Jazz's offense. So, resolution number three, Donovan Mitchell, work on driving to the rim more and shooting more three-pointers. My fourth resolution is aimed at Joel Embiid. What I really want to see from him is more aggression, especially on offense when he's taking the ball to the basket. Over his last seven games, he's been shooting 93% from the free throw line. 93%. That's Steph Curry territory. Joel Embiid is 7 feet tall and 280 pounds, shooting 93% from the free throw line. But right now, he's only taking 6.4 attempts from the line. That's what he's been taking over these last seven games. Throughout the season, he's been shooting 8.3 attempts, and last year, he shot 10.3 attempts per game. So he's down these last seven games about four per game from last season, which I don't know what else to tell him. He's 7 feet tall and 280 pounds. Take it to the basket. Players' only option is to foul you, or else you're going to dunk on them or finish on them. And if they foul you, go to the line and hit your 93%. Obviously, I know that's not how statistics works, but if you're on that sort of a run, quit taking the ball out so much. I forgot who pointed this out, but the game after, he really stuck it to Giannis. They played the Magic. The Philadelphia 76ers played Orlando. And Joel Embiid, out of his 21 shots he took against the Magic, only took one from the paint. All right, that's a win for the Magic. That's a win for any team, okay? So Embiid, I want you to start attacking the rim a lot more, because when you're engaged on both offense and defense, you might be the best player in the league. For my fifth and final resolution, I'm aiming it at all of us, the fans. I need us all to stop overreacting, okay? The Bucks' worst loss came against Philly. LeBron apparently looks weak against the Clippers. Sure, these are a couple of things that we can point to, but let's not make big sweeping conclusions from those. Did you know that back in 2016 and 2017, Warriors team, that's the full strength, Kevin Durant, Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Draymond Green, Warriors, had a couple of 20-point losses. They lost to the Spurs by 20 points, and then they lost to a young Lakers team, led by D'Angelo Russell, by 20 points. You know how that team ended up doing? Their playoff record was 16-1. Their only loss was to a Cavaliers team that basically, I don't even think basically, I think they literally set records shooting three-pointers, and there was some sketchy ref play going on there. But regardless, that was the only game they lost in the playoffs, all right? So let's not overreact to any of these regular season games. Sure, we can take some points from them, we can talk about them and use them in a body of knowledge, but let's hold back on some of these hot takes.
Thanks, Cody, for that NBA update. Cody is a senior writer for OTH, and you can find him on Twitter at Cody Hodick. Next, we talk the New Year's Day Bowls with Vaughn Dalzell. You can find him on Twitter at Vaughn Dalzell. That's D-A-L-Z-E-L-L.
Hey, Vaughn, how you doing? And Happy New Year to you.
Hey, Christian. Thanks for having me on again, man. Just want to wish you and all your listeners Happy New Year. It's pretty entertaining one so far with college football kicking us off, and I'm sure we got a lot to talk about regarding that.
That's true. Absolutely. We have a lot to talk about. New Year's Day, January 1st, 2020 did not disappoint for college football. We had some fantastic football games. All four of them were great to watch. If you were sitting at home, had a day off, and had the opportunity to sit on your couch to watch college football, you were in for a treat. And we're going to dig into them. We're going to talk about them. And we're going to start off with the one that was first, and that's the Outback Bowl between Minnesota and Auburn. Minnesota wound up winning that game 31-24. And the connection between Tanner Morgan and Tyler Johnson was just impressive to me. Seeing the Johnson, 12 receptions for 204 yards and two touchdowns. And that was ultimately the X factor for Minnesota to win that game. It was just a fantastic football game, in my opinion. Minnesota ending their Cinderella season with a bowl win. Fantastic for that coach, PJ Fleck. What was your thoughts on that game?
Yeah, I mean, surprising that Auburn's going to go out and beat Alabama, then lose a game to Minnesota, a team that hasn't played the two top teams in the Big Ten this year, and still were 11-2. So I really thought that was a letdown game for Auburn. We kind of seen that that was their season was make or break on the Alabama game, and once they did that, we kind of didn't see they care as much as Minnesota. But yeah, Johnson was amazing. Tyler Johnson with the 204 yards. I mean, he accounted for almost all of Tamar Morgan's passing yards, 204 out of 278. And then, we'd be remiss if we didn't mention Mahim Ibrahim, 140 yards. He had a touchdown as well. Minnesota's defense, though, was no joke, McChristian. I mean, only 7 points in the second half. They really outplayed Auburn in this game, I think, in every facet. And it's a great win for the Minnesota program, who, I mean, haven't reached 11 wins in over a century easily.
It's going to be really interesting to see how that row to boat mentality really continues in Minnesota. On that Auburn side, you're right. That disappointing, it's a pretty disappointing season for Auburn, only at 9-4 after beating Alabama this season. Freshman Bo Nix, he kind of struggled in this one, only 176 yards passing. But as we said earlier, Minnesota moving to 11-2, very impressive season, and Auburn to 9-4. So very interested to see what happens with that Minnesota team next year as we get back into college football, which we're already counting down. And hey, we're not even at the national championship. That's the crazy part about sports. You're always counting down to the next game, no matter where it's at. And we'll get right into that next game, and that's the Citrus Bowl. And this game was probably the biggest blowout out of all the four. And that was Alabama. I think they really came in with that chip on their shoulder, and they wanted to prove everybody wrong why they should have been in that college football playoffs. And they crushed Michigan. They put a pretty good beating on them, 35-16. Mac Jones definitely filled the shoes nicely of that Tuli Tagovailoa, 16-25, 327, three touchdowns, and a lot of that went to Jerry Jeudy, that wide receiver. He's probably going to be a top five pick in that next NFL draft.
Yep.
Bama looked real good. What's your thoughts on that one?
Yeah, you stole a lot of my thoughts there. I definitely would say Jerry Jeudy is a top pick, top 10. Hopefully a guy like Sam Darnold could get. But running back Najim Harris also for Alabama was a monster. I mean, he got a lot of his yards on the last drive of the game when they were kind of eating up the clock, but he finished with 136 as well. But that defense just shut down Patterson. I mean, Shea Patterson had a 44.6 QBR in that game. Mac Jones was rolling on all cylinders. Alabama's receivers are just flat-out freaks of nature. All of them got it done. I mean, Devontae Smith looked good. Miller Forsenau looked good. Henry Ruggs was another guy that made a couple big plays for them, and they had a big punt return as well. I mean, Alabama had a chip on the shoulder, like you said, Christian, and after that Auburn loss, they got knocked out of the college football playoffs for the first time. They really wanted to prove that they are still one of the best programs, and I mean – I think that they probably would have put up more of a fight than Oklahoma did in the college football playoffs, but that's just my opinion.
Yeah, you might not be wrong with that one. And I guess we'll never know because, with that Auburn win. But I am excited. I will say I am excited that Alabama did not make it just for the fact of a change. Finally got to see something different. I think that's always the biggest important thing in sports. But with that loss by Michigan there, that makes Harbaugh 10 straight losses to top 25 teams on the road.
Yeah.
So do you, the question I have is, do you see the Wolverines possibly making a change with the head coaching position this offseason?
I don't think it's going to be this offseason. I think this will be another year where they go in. If they go into another good bowl game next year, so you know, you see them win 9 or 10 games again, and then they kind of fall on their face, then that's a situation where it might be time for him to go. I'm all for giving a coach a couple years under their belt. He has done some good things, but obviously he still cannot beat Ohio State, Penn State, and all the and he's struggled versus the bigger, better teams, Alabama as well. Alabama's no slouch, obviously. I didn't expect them to win today. But 16 points, no points in the second half. You got to do better, John Harbaugh.
Yeah, very interesting is what's going to happen there. I think there might be some change. I think we're going to hear a lot of talk, at least a lot of controversy if nothing happens. I think he's definitely on the hot seat. Yeah. There's no doubt about it. For another Big Ten matchup, this was a Big Ten versus Pac-12, and that was the Rose Bowl. And the Rose Bowl usually doesn't disappoint, and this one was no different. A one-point victory for Oregon, 28-27, and Justin Herbert. Wow. How about this guy? 3 rushing touchdowns. If you would have told me at the beginning of this game that Herbert was going to rush for 3 touchdowns, I would have said that you were watching the wrong football game, but he looked absolutely amazing. Jonathan Taylor for Wisconsin only had 94 yards in probably his last game as a Badger, but Oregon just looked really good. It was a defensive battle for the most part of this football game, but Herbert was the X factor. Your thoughts?
Yeah, if you'd have showed me the odds on Justin Herbert to rush for 3 touchdowns, we'd probably be a millionaire right now. I mean, it's insane. The guy had 49 rushing attempts, I want to say, in the whole season, scored 1 time, and he scores 3 today. And he obviously is just all arm, no legs, and that guy. I mean, he impressed in all facets. But I was honestly more impressed with the Oregon defense and shutting down Jonathan Taylor. Held him to 94 yards. That's not an easy task. He had over 100 total with receiving yards thrown in there. But, I mean, not many teams were able to hold him back under 100 yards in 3 seasons. And Oregon did it here in the Rose Bowl. And like you said, this bowl game never disappoints. It's always 2 of the most exciting teams in the country. And we got that again today. And I didn't expect Oregon to really pull the comeback there at the end. But any team that would like Wisconsin that's going to turn the ball over 4 times in 1 game, it's going to be hard to win any game, let alone against a team that's 11-2 and one of the best in the country. So I kind of think Wisconsin squandered that game away. But, yeah, Herbert balled out of his mind. And give credit to Oregon's defense, because the Ducks' defense was quietly the MVP today.
Absolutely, I agree. I think Herbert was just the nice compliment with that defense and them 3 rushing touchdowns. Obviously, it doesn't look bad on that stat line. But Oregon coming out for that win, 28-27 against Wisconsin. And then we ended the night last night with the Sugar Bowl. And this was a good game, too. Ultimately, Georgia defeats Baylor 26-14. These are both teams that were just missed the college football playoffs in it till the end. Georgia was actually the 4 seed until the SEC championship game. Jake Fromm's possible last game for Georgia, as he might declare for the NFL draft. He looked pretty good, 250 yards and threw in the air 2 touchdowns. So looked good for Jake Fromm and this Georgia team. On the Baylor side, they had some issues with their quarterback, especially at the end with an injury at Charlie Brewer, which is unfortunate after that concussion. He took a pretty big hit. I don't know if you saw it. It was brutal. Yeah. So hopefully he's all good and everything taken care of that. But other than that, what do you got for the rest of this game? Georgia looked pretty good in this one, though.
Yeah, George Pickens was amazing. He dominated the first half of the game. I mean, he pretty much stole the show in the first half, going 11 catches, 165 and a score. But Fromm, it should be his last game in college football. This year, honestly, I don't think helped his draft stock too much. He only had 7 games out of the 14 that went over. He had over 200 passing yards. Their loss to South Carolina kind of really was detrimental to their season. But obviously, LSU was the nail in the coffin when it came to them getting into the college football playoffs. Baylor had a great season as well, but they just couldn't get it done. 2 teams that haven't scored many points all season, but have held their opposing teams to not much as well. And we kind of saw that here today. And I do want to throw it out there that Vegas made out beautiful on this line, Christian. Opened up at 39. They moved it up to 41 by game day this morning. It hit 40 with no points let up in the fourth quarter. And, yes, if you're wondering, I did have a parlay to finish off the night with the over. And we finished 1 point short. It's all right. We'll be back. we'll be back at him for bowl season starting tomorrow.
There you go.
But I was very impressed with Georgia. Jake Fromm went out on a high note to end his career. And, yeah, interesting to see what Georgia does next year. But Baylor will be a pretty strong team, too, with their quarterbacks and some young guys.
It'll be interesting to see what Baylor's head coach does. I know he's getting a lot of talks in the NFL. New York Giants is one of them that's been calling a possibility of him moving up to there. It'd be interesting. And Jake Fromm hasn't technically declared yet. There is a possibility he comes back, but I feel it's unlikely. He's either going to be a late first-round pick or early second, in my opinion. And then when you just talked about earlier about Pickens, yeah. He's only a freshman. That's the crazy part. He's going to ball out next season as well. It's going to be great. So Georgia's probably still going to be in it no matter what happens next year. They'll still be a threat in that SEC. So I'm looking forward to that. But this was a great set of football games. We got some good ones on today as well. It's going to be a fantastic day of college football. Vaughn, appreciate you coming on the air with me today, and I hope to have you on again soon.
Yeah, as always, I appreciate it, Christian, and Happy New Year to all the listeners. Hope you guys had a great bowl season and hope it continues. Can't wait for the national title.
Awesome. Thanks, Tim.
Thanks for listening. Tune in weekdays right here at the OTH Daily Podcast.